Good Friday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. It's August 29th, 2025. Thank you for making the show part of your day. We've got a great one planned for you, including Sean Sharif from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, our sister station, where Cowboys fans are melting down over Jerry Jones' decision to trade Micah Parsons. Mike Clay, Fantasy at 5. We will spin around the NFL with him, and Gary Myers wrote a book, Brady versus Belichick, but he was also the guy that was supposed to write the Robert Griffin Surviving Washington book. We'll ask him about that when he joins us in 4 hours at 6 o'clock right here on The Fan, taking you up to 6:15 and Nats home baseball at Nats Park. Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Ruye.
Oh, hey, buddy. Another nice little fall preview. Again, it's a false fall. We got the second summer or the summer of lies. Kind of, I'm sure it'll be a million degrees in the middle of September, but I don't care. It's gorgeous out. We had a nice little early set of appetizers, some college foosball last night. Boise State did not look ready for primetime. South Florida put a whooping on them dudes. I feel bad, kind of, because Boise State basically gets one shot. You got to be perfect, run the table, and you're still probably going to get screwed by the committee that only wants teams from the big conferences. But, man, that was ugly. And we head in tomorrow with an unbelievable set of college foosball games to set the stage for the NFL next week.
Around town, high school football started last night. Week one, Thursday night football because of a holiday today. So I was at Annandale High School to see Marshall and Annandale, but I know there was a heavyweight match. My guy, Logan Paulson, who's my co-host on Take Command, is now the play caller and the OC for the Stonebridge Bulldogs, who escaped with a victory over Madison, a perennial power. But there was a lot of good high school football last night. Hey, Fall. Looking good.
Hey, girl. How you doing?
Like that dress on
you. You look great.
Let's have a season, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just sit back on our couches, put our shoes up on the table if we're allowed to. The coffee table in front of us. Eat some chips and dip and bring on the Coke Zero.
My feet is up. Let's watch some foosball.
I normally hate any of the social media trends that aren't that funny that try to be cute.
Uh-huh.
But I do like the bit. It's now overplayed. But I like the one where when it originally came out that like a guy gave his wife a two-week notice letter before football season that he was about to become a terrible husband.
Because that one hit pretty close to home.
A terrible dad. It's actually a really good idea. Like, hey, you might not have thought I was the best dad in the world these last several months, but that was as good as it's going to get. Because Saturdays, I'm unavailable. Sundays, I'm also unavailable, but at least Monday night and Thursday night, I'll also not be able to do anything to help anybody. Tuesdays, I'm yours. You need me on Wednesdays? I gotcha. The occasional Friday, unless the Maction thing is intriguing. But yeah, we're here. We did it. High school, Friday nights. College, Saturday. Pro ball on Sunday. That time of year.
Sorry about it.
I thought we could start in lieu of Micah Parsons being traded out of the NFC East. Or I guess I'm supposed to call him Michael. That's his name, right?
So Jerry Jones said, again, when you have incompetent ownership or people in charge, you get this. See Kurt Cousins. See Michael Parsons.
I think that's the most disrespectful thing that you can do, is routinely say somebody's name wrong. And I don't mean like misspeaking it if there's a pronunciation thing. That happens, I guess.
Like a McLean accent.
Right.
Yeah.
But if somebody routinely called you Dave, meaningfully, all the time, if somebody thought my name was Graham and just that I worked with for years, that signed my paychecks, if every time I saw CK in his office or Ivy in the kitchen or something, she's like, hey, Greg, you know, at some point I would start taking offense to that. Now, to be clear, they both call me Grant. It's very nice that they do.
Sure, yeah,
I appreciate that. But can you do anything more disrespectful than just not say someone's name properly or not know their name?
There are a couple things, but I see your point. Like it's pretty horrendous at this point. I mean, this is someone you're going to sign to a contract until recently that you were going to give him $40-some million a year to be a linchpin of your organization, to be the third pillar, right? With Dak Prescott, $50 million cap hit this year, $74 million next year. By the way, again, $74 million cap hit next year. CeeDee Lamb is the other leg of the tripod. You're going to give Micah Parsons an outrageous amount of money and years, rightfully so, because he's a superstar. Michael. I spoke to Michael.
The best part of the press conference, there were a bunch of highlights. I actually thought about maybe just playing the presser today and stopping and starting and laughing and just kind of trolling.
I mean, it's great.
Having a good old time. And that might have been good radio content. But I thought the most entertaining of a lot of laughable moments was the ninth or whatever time when Jerry Jones called Micah Michael. And his son, Steven, sitting next to him, right into the microphone, not trying to hide it. Or he goes, Micah. He just, like, telling his dad, like, hey, it's Micah. And then Jerry goes, Micah. He just corrects himself. Do we have that?
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
About, I'm sorry.
He finally was just like, come on, man.
Mike, just say Michael. Michael. Oh, man, Michael. Michael, look at my, I know you can't hear me. Look at my mouth. Michael.
Did I talk to Michael?
Micah.
They're an embarrassment, and I'm here for it. But I thought in honor of Micah Parsons, we would rank our top five pain in the butt players in the NFC East now that he's gone.
Micah.
He would have unequivocally made this list. Would he have been one? Would he have been two? Up for debate, but he would have been very high on these lists. Now, if you're a real one, and you've been around this show for a long time, you're familiar with this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
This is an exercise that we've done annually, right before the football season, just about every single year.
Yep.
And this was the segment that brought us the Jeremy Maclin charade.
Sure did.
Because, in fairness, I don't know why Jeremy Maclin ever should have made the top five unless the NFC East was on some lean years.
Well, here's how it came up. I was trying to go outside the box a little bit, and I went back to the year before and looked at a couple of the game logs, and I go, oh, this is going to be spicy. Completely forgot, of course, he didn't play for Philadelphia anymore. I was on Pro Football Reference looking at last year's roster. It was a major move in the offseason, and I was scrambling, trying to go somebody that, you know, to spark some conversation. That was different. And I made a glaring mistake and was made to look foolish. Because
did he bounce?
Shut up, Danny. This, not now, buddy. I'm trying to explain what happened.
This was 2015. This has been 10 years.
Yeah, and it will live on forever.
There are people that still name their fantasy football teams in our league, did he bounce? There are people that still bring this up routinely at events. I mean, it is quite literally one of the most memorable, recognizable, epic, celebrated? Can I call it that?
I don't sell it. It's not a celebration.
I think a lot of us are celebrating.
Yeah,
you're certainly not celebrating.
No, it is a joke at my expense. Certainly. So in that sense, it's a celebration. It's an oft referenced.
It's a beloved foible. Moment in show history.
Yeah, because it's what you'll listen for here is the certainty. Listen to how confident I was. That's, I think, what does it.
87 catches in his first year in Kansas City, 85 catches his final year in Philly. So at that time, he was a good player. But we were talking about players in the division that were a pain to deal with, which is the subject at hand. So we figured we would go through our top fives, and then we would open up the phones for you guys next so that you could tell us who is the number one player in the NFC East that you hate having to play. The guy that if you could just do the Men in Black thing, where you take that little light, that little, what do we call
the
that?
The mind eraser.
Contraption.
Yeah.
You hold it right in front of one of the owner's faces, and you freeze them, and you go, you're going to pull a Jerry Jones and trade, name that player. Who would you tell them to get rid of? So let's go through our top five players that we hate dealing with in the NFC East. Danny, you get us started. We'll go 5-1.
Kayvon Thibodeau, not good against anyone else. Is that hyperbolic, Danny? No, it's not. As a football player for the New York Giants, he is 3-1-1 against Washington. He has well over 5 sacks against Washington in 6 games, and he doesn't have more than 2 or 3 against anybody else. He has dominated Washington. He has been effective against Washington. They're waiting for the breakout. All they have to do is play Washington, like his former teammate and brother, Daniel Jones, who only played well against Washington and one other team that won like 2 games. He makes his whole career against my local 53.
Number 5 on my list is going to be one of the best receivers in the National Football League, C.D. Lamb. I think dealing with him might be less a fearful exercise this year because the corner room is improved and the secondary should be better. But in his career against Washington, I've seen him catch 54 balls for 515 yards and 5 touchdowns in 9 games. Doesn't sound like he chews them up necessarily, but some quick math tells you that he averages 60 yards per game despite having had a couple of donuts in there. He's had some monster games against Washington, and I just think it's an overall talent nomination here. This is someone who, based on the fact that they're going to target him a dozen times, is probably going to go out there when you play the Cowboys and catch seven or eight balls for close to 100 yards, and he might score a touchdown. And there have been years where Washington just didn't have anybody who can run with him, didn't have anybody that can play with him. I hope Marshon Lattimore is up to the challenge. They're paying him as a number one corner after acquiring him for draft picks to shut guys like C.D. Lamb down. Number five on my list, players in the division that I don't like dealing with, C.D. Lamb.
Number four for old Randy Duye is Quinyon Mitchell. They got something there pretty special in Philadelphia. So as all the turnovers happening in, for the Eagles, and that's understandable. You win a Super Bowl, people need to get paid. You got kind of the next crop developing. They got a badass in that guy. You saw how effective he was in that first Philadelphia game last year. It was just him and Terry McLaurin, and McLaurin wasn't open a whole heck of a lot. And, you know, I think it was one target until deep into the game. And even then, it just not much effectiveness from 17 against Mitchell. They can do that. He's really, really, really good, and he's going to be a pain in the butt for years.
A.J. Brown, number four on my list. He probably should be higher, by the way. In six career games against Washington, he has 560 yards and six touchdowns. Notably, a 13-catch, 175-yard, two-touchdown game where he made it very clear Emmanuel Forbes was not it. There's another game in the same season, oh, by the way, when he single-handedly took Washington's lunch in 2023, where he went 8 for 130 and two scores. How about that season? Two games, 17 catches, 300 yards, and four touchdowns. Decent days at the office. His worst game as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles against the Commanders has been a one-catch, seven-yard performance where he didn't finish the ball game. Otherwise, 8 for 97, 5 for 65, 8 for 130, 9 for 175, 5 for 85. He's got touchdowns in four of his six career games against the Commanders. This is a Washington killer. Probably should be higher on my list, but I'm going back-to-back receivers to start. A.J. Brown, number four.
Number three for old Randy Duye. You've already mentioned him. That's C.D. Lamb. I think we're underselling it, if anything. His second most yards, second most touchdowns against anybody. This is a first-round top five fantasy pick. Play him against Washington. He has done very, very well. It's Giants, by the way, have it worse off than we do, certainly. But he has been wildly effective. 54 catches, 515 yards, five touchdowns. His most touchdowns against Washington, more so than anybody else in his career. He is a problem, and anything that happens in their offense for them goes through him. So if anybody else has an inch of forward progress, it's because Washington had to do something special just to slow CeeDee Lamb down that play. That'll be a theme in my rankings here.
I think number three is going to be a little bit of a hipster answer for me as we rank the players in the division that we worry about the most. This guy has statistically not really done anything against Washington in four career games now. But Jalen Carter of the Eagles is a gigantic pain in the tuchus. Do you remember the play on fourth down in Philly last year? We were there with Kondori and Murad, club level, enjoying ourselves at the link. Washington had marched down the field late third quarter. They were giving the Eagles all they could handle on national TV. And they elected, instead of kicking to take a lead, might have even been early fourth quarter, to go for a fourth down. It was right after John Bates somehow didn't pick up a first down when he was like past the stick, and then he ran backwards to make sure that he didn't get the first down, and then it was like fourth and inches. Jalen Carter blew up that play so easily and obviously. It was like he had driven 85 miles an hour in a passenger van through Washington's offensive front to ruin this unbelievable best fourth down team in league history's chances at advancing the football. He has three or four plays like that in every game. So when you look at the numbers through four contests, you're going to see six tackles, eight assists, no sacks, and you're going to go, you can't put him that high. Every time you play the Eagles, I think for 3 hours before that matchup, every Sunday morning, about how do I make sure Jalen Carter doesn't kill me? How do I make sure that he's constantly chipped and doubled and getting ear-holed by somebody next to him? He's number three on my list.
Number two for me. I will let you know when Washington has covered this person. I've never seen it. In two games. Most yards against anybody else, 19 catches, 186 yards. Should have been 20 catches for what would have beaten Washington in week number two last year. That's Malik Nabers. I'll let you know when there's an answer for him. I don't think they have it. I don't think, with all due respect to Marshon Lattimore, hopefully looking healthier. I like Trey Amos an awful lot. That dude is unbelievable, and that dude is a problem.
So I didn't have him on my list, which is shocking, probably.
He's your neighbor's guy.
You know how much of a mark I am? But I did not have him crack my top five because I went heavy with D linemen high on this list. I think that's somewhat reflective of some of the interior offensive line issues we've had round these parts with the Commanders over the years. I think they're getting there to a point where that's not going to be a problem anymore. Coleman may end up making a Pro Bowl at guard, hopefully. Biotish, very stellar at center. And then Cosme, when he's back healthy, is terrific at right guard. But Danny, number two on my list of players I hate dealing with, I think he's the most underrated player in the NFL defensively. Dexter Lawrence of the New York Giants. Dexter Lawrence is a game wrecker. If you go back to their playoff win over the Vikes a couple years ago when Daniel Jones went ham sandwich against Minnesota, Lawrence quite literally blew that game into smithereens for the Vikings. I think they had like five incompletions all game from Kirk O'Chains, but they're off the field on third downs with him coming downhill. The fourth down where they threw short of the sticks and everyone killed Cousins, Lawrence blows up the play. He is unblockable in isolation one-on-one. If you go into a game and you go, hey, Pro Bowl guard, take care of Dexter Lawrence, you will lose that game. He's that good. The only guy I think better than him in the entire league at his position might be Chris Jones. Maybe. I'm not even convinced of that. But Dexter Lawrence petrifies me. I stay up in the middle of the night worrying about what he's going to do. He's number two on my list of players in the East that I don't like dealing with.
Number one, you mentioned it. As you said, probably should be higher on your list. Well, he's number one on mine. That's A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown has destroyed Washington. Most catches and most yards and most touchdowns against anybody else, with the exception of Houston, who he played a whole lot more when he was with Tennessee still. Again, more time in Tennessee than he was in Washington, only six games. But his second most touchdowns against anybody else, second most yards, second most catches, and that includes a game that you already mentioned where he only had one catch for 7 yards and then didn't finish it or whatever. Everything that happens to me is because they can't deal with that dude. I think he's incredible. Devontae Smith is very good. Dallas Goedert's good. The guy that I'm sure is number one on your list is very good too. But this is the person that they have no answer for. Last year it was, let's try Emmanuel Forbes. Let's try Noah Eye. Let's try St. Juice. Let's try seven different people. They couldn't stop him when Kenny Pickett was throwing to him. So you have to cover that so the other guys underneath are open. That includes some of the running games. To me, A.J. Brown, they have not had an answer yet.
So we have the same number one then?
No, that was my number one.
Mine too. Of course I'm kidding. Saquon Barkley is the answer. I was thinking about going Darius Slayton here. I thought about Jahan Dotson, but I think I'm going to lean into Saquon Barkley.
Good bit by you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. He single-handedly destroyed the Commanders three times. Fourth quarter of game one, first quarter of game two. Over those two quarters of football, he ran for 200 yards. And then the playoff game, first play from scrimmage. Do you remember the entire week? All we're talking about leading up to that game.
How do they slow him down? How do they stop him?
Hey, this time they got a plan. They played him twice. Commit everything you have to stopping Saquon Barkley. If you do that and make Jalen Hurts beat you, maybe, just maybe, you've got a chance. His first play of the game was a 60-yard major tutty. His first play of the game was that awesome mascot that I love who's grown on me so much that Danny doesn't get steamed up for.
Correct.
Saquon Barkley. I don't need to say any more than this. He was the best player in the league last year. Now, I'm going to be loud wrong on this if it doesn't happen. I think he's going to play about half the season this year. I don't think that workload is sustainable. This is like Patrick Corbin in 2019. You're going to pay for it for a little while stuff. But if he plays against Washington, I got no answers for him.
Yeah, they wrote him to the Super Bowl. To me, the reason he didn't make my list at all was I've seen Washington do well against him. In other words, when they decided in that second game, okay, not you, you're not beating us. I think he had like 30 yards on 15 or 16 carries after the dedicated resources. But Kenny Pickett carved their butts up, and you know, A.J. Brown lit him up, and Devontae Smith lit him up. They only won that game because Devontae Smith dropped the pass, one of the most sure-handed receivers in the league. Barkley's killed them. I mean, you look at his career totals against Washington, it's comical, laughable, even at times.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I'm talking specifically about him last year as an Eagle and basically playing behind the best offensive line in the league. But if you look at his numbers, to Danny's point, with the New York Giants, it's the exact same. Let me see how many games this is.
11 games.
11 games, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. That's just the rushing, by the way. He's also had monster performances as a receiver as well. He's had receiving games of 73 and 90 on the ledger. But as a rusher, he has run for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. and he's still got six games to spare. He might run for 2,000 in 17 games.
Easily his most games, attempts, yards, touchdowns, both in terms of rushing and receiving against anybody else, Washington number one.
All right, so quick recap. This is the top five players I don't like dealing with in the division. 5, CeeDee Lamb. 4, A.J. Brown. 3, Jalen Carter. 2, Dexter Lawrence. 1, Saquon Barkley.
5, Kayvon Thibodeau. 4, Quinyon Mitchell. 3, CeeDee Lamb. 2, Malik Nabers. And 1, A.J. Brown.
1, Cowboy. 1, Giant. 3, Eagles for me is the breakdown.
I got 2 Giants, 2 Eagles, and 1 Cowboy.
Let's go to the phones next. Who is the number one player in the division that you fear and hate playing? This is the Micah Parsons conversation. Now that Micah is no longer on these lists, 800-636-1067. 245 will tell you what wide receiver sounds like he could be coming to the Commanders offensive huddle. This is Grant and Danny.
Here's Barkley, a little shovel, looking for an edge, gets it, Saquon Barkley, first down, Barkley, oh! Saquon, touchdown!
With Danny, I'm Grant, this is the Fan, sorry for playing that, we should have said earmuffs before we did. That was the first play of the NFC Championship game with the Eagles offense on the field, and that was Saquon Barkley doing Saquon things against the Washington Commanders. Who is your most feared player in the division? There was a time where Micah Parsons would have been in that conversation. Thanks to Jerry Jones, he no longer is. But I went with a top five that included just one Cowboy at number 5, CeeDee Lamb, and then 3 Eagles in my top 4 with A.J. Brown, Jalen Carter, Saquon Barkley. I've got Dexter Lawrence of the New York Giants at number 2. Danny, you had a very different-looking top 5.
Kayvon Thibodeau, who has tormented Washington, only team he's played well against.
He is literally the one guy on either list that is a extremely average player otherwise, but my God, does he light it up against this team.
He's a Dillon G All-Star. If you know your baseball, if you're an old Randy Duguay, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Pedestrian dude that plays so well against Washington. Quinyon Mitchell, star cornerback for Philadelphia. I think they got one right there. That guy's a star, in my humble opinion. CeeDee Lamb at number 3, Malik Nabers at number 2, and A.J. Brown, number 1.
So Toby brought a guy up that I had not even considered putting on my list, and then when he showed me the numbers, they were a hell of a lot better than I thought. Toby, who was our biggest omission in your opinion?
Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is, I would say, a average passer generally when he faces the rest of the National Football League. But if you look at some of the game logs for him over the last couple of years, 18 to 28 for 221, 29 to 38, 319 and 4 touchdowns, 25 of 37, 319 and 2 touchdowns. In his career, 12 touchdowns to 3 picks, and that's not including any of the rushing numbers for Jalen Hurts.
By far and away his best numbers against any team, you'll never guess who. Washington.
that I would have assumed, but I would not. I now remember the 4 touchdown coming out party. That was in D.C., wasn't it? Because I remember being at that game, I think. There were a lot that looked like that one, probably. Mm. But the 2 games where A.J. Brown went absolutely ham sandwich against Emmanuel Forbes, obviously he was the guy throwing the passes there. He has definitely put up gaudy numbers. They're better than I even would have thought. So he makes some sense in a top 5. Darius, do we have any omissions that bothered you before we get to the phones?
No, not really. I mean, A.J. Brown and Saquon are at the top of my list. A.J. Brown's been one of my favorite receivers in the league, and to see him be in our division is an absolute nightmare. And then Saquon is obvious. But yeah, Jalen Hurts was definitely the big omission, I would say.
The A.J. Brown trade to the Eagles is kind of the opposite of Micah, where in his prime, we're like, thank God we don't have to deal with that guy twice a year. A.J. Brown coming from Tennessee. You might see him every couple 4 years or whatever, every 7 years. You might have to deal with him. Maybe he's injured or something. You get a reprieve. Now, twice a season. At a time, by the way, where the corner play had been really, really bad, and hopefully they're fixing that. 800-636-1067 is the number. It's the Jeremy Maclin conversation. Did he bounce? Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville. What's up, buddy?
What's up, guys? And I want to say that free agency has ruined this because it used to be a deep passion of mine, like absolutely hating Lawrence Taylor and wishing that Herschel Walker would get injured. But with free agency, it's hard to develop that long-term hatred towards these guys.
That's actually a really good point.
It's totally true, Chris.
Also, Chris, I think that the idea that some of these guys inevitably play on your team or whatever, like I've told this story a million times, but the idea that Stephen Bowen, a former Dallas Cowboy, was on Washington's team as their five tech end in a 34, and the night before a game, he was like going out to dinner with DeMarcus Ware and Tank Lawrence and some of those dudes. I just remember thinking, what a different era. Like the idea of hating a player on another team kind of is dead.
Also, fantasy football has kind of ruined it too, because you know, you're huge definitely going to have AJ Brown on your fantasy squad. So I got to go with AJ Brown. I mean, he's averaging a touchdown and 93 yards in six games against Washington. He's just basically unstoppable. He's a freak. He's a matchup nightmare. And, there's going to be a moment where he's going to explode for a touchdown, and there's really nothing that we can do to stop it. We just have to outscore him.
It's inevitable.
Appreciate you.
He is, when they play Washington, he is inevitable. The Eagles scored 55 points in that NFC title game, and obviously Barkley was the bell cow. But in that game, A.J. Brown had six catches for 96 yards and a touchdown, and had his way with Lattimore. And that was one of the more deflating elements of the performance, was whatever that meltdown penalty in the end zone was.
Whatever that was.
He chews them up, man, and he has. So hopefully, whether it's Lattimore or Amos or Sandra still in the slot or whatever, they can put forth a much better effort against him this year.
Yeah, he is, again, he does this against everybody to a degree, right? So I never have as much of a problem with it. I mean, it's frustrating when it's happening to you. But I always talk about this. When Randy Johnson shoves it on you, that's what he does to everybody. When someone's not very good and does it, it's infuriating. This guy does this to all folks. You cannot single cover him because he just, you know, pushes off or knocks down a smaller DB and runs past big ones.
Val's in the district. What's up? How are you? Val, you there?
Yes. Sorry, I was in a tunnel. So my answer is Saquon Barkley, but just to piggyback on the Thibodeau thing, it's Saquon only because Daniel Jones isn't in the division anymore. I haven't looked at the game logs, but it seems like he always played up and out against us, and it was really, really embarrassing.
So
watching this.
We did this last year, Val. It's so true. I remember he was on both of our top fives, and we both thought we were doing like a funny joking thing last year. But his career numbers against Washington are staggering. It's 14 touchdowns and three interceptions in his nine games against Washington, and he had a five-touchdown game. His career numbers against every other team are a D. His career numbers against the Commanders are an A. He's on a different level. Career passer rating of over 100. In nine games, it's 1,800 passing yards. It's a 3,600-yard season, basically, with mid-20s touchdowns. None of those things he's ever done before. But that's what he was on pace to do. Luckily, the Commander killer is now in Indianapolis with
Thank
the Colts.
Goodness gracious. Let's not see that guy.
Who's going to be the team that he beats up on in the South? Like the Titans or something?
The Jaguars would be like, we can't stand Daniel Jones.
Let's go to Dean in Fairfax on the Fan. How are you, Dean?
Hey, Grant, Danny. How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Good. Danny, first off, I really like the Quinion Mitchell. I mean, it wasn't very flashy last year, but I mean, he was like quietly great. But I got to say, I'm a big spirit guy. I think the best player in the NFC East is Jeremy Maclin.
You son of a bitch.
There he is.
You son of a bitch. You heard
there
me.
There he is.
How dare you?
Did he bounce?
Shut up, Danny. Shut up, man.
He went spirit guy.
I didn't get that.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but he's making fun of me. So I've lost my ability.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm bearing the lead. I really like the bit. But when he said I'm a big spirit guy, I thought, are we about to talk about women's soccer?
Like he suckered me in with something. Like, what does that mean?
He's about to go like all Trent Rodman on me.
He had me listening closely, and then he swerved like that.
By the way, the spirit atmospheres over at Audi Field are a little bit silly. I saw a video of one of their recent games over there. The joint was rocking. Like there were, I don't know, maybe 14,000-15,000, maybe a little less than that, I'm not sure. Wasn't like a packed early Defenders game from year one, but it was certainly, I would say, rivaled or maybe even exceeded anything the Defenders got out there this year. Probably more. But it was definitely families and stuff. But I just saw like videos and people in the crowd. It was pretty lit, as the kids say.
They do say that. Audi Field, man. It's lit. Audi Field. That's my selling point. Like, it is hard to go there, especially on like a nice evening, and not have a pretty awesome time.
But I think the quality of the soccer in that league is very good, and they're a really good team from what I gather. And they've got stars. There's like U.S. Women's National Team players that play for them. Trent Rodman's a superstar. But if you're into that and you go there, I think you have a blast.
I think you have a good time.
It's kind of how I feel about the Defenders, right? Like, I'm one of the few of the proud. I'll go over there and I have a good old time. But this is that, and it's just a bigger crowd. But yeah, he said, I like
I'm a spirit guy.
Is he talking about spirits like because they're gone? Someone that's left?
I don't know.
But his spirit is still here?
I didn't get it. I was like, because he had what that does is it makes you go, oh, okay. And then now I'm listening closely to figure out the next thing. And then he suckered me in to jab my biscuits. That's what he did.
If it was that next level, then it's really, really brilliant.
Very intuitive, yeah.
Let's go to Sean in Winchester. Get the last word on this. We're ranking the players we hate dealing with in the division with Micah gone.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I still have nightmares about Brian Dawkins, but the Eagles' starting offensive line past two seasons, I would say, they always seem to get their way. They never get penalties. they constantly, maybe it's skill or not, but if you watch them play anybody else, they look messy, but against us, they look like a juggernaut, and you can't get around them. I don't understand it.
Well, they look like a juggernaut because it's the best offensive line in the league.
Probably. A, they're great, and B, they've had some fun times against Washington.
You ever seen Jordan Mailata? He's just the Statue of Liberty, but with feet, you know, with mobility and athleticism. He's giant. Former seventh-round pick, figure that out. Howie Roseman's the man. Landon Dickerson at left guard, former second-round pick, who's become a very good player. While Jason Kelce was playing his final days as a Hall of Fame center, they go get Cam Jurgens, who's taken over. The one question this year is that Tyler Steen, who was a backup, is now becoming their right guard with an injury. And Lane Johnson's one of the best right tackles of his era, probably going to make the Hall of Fame eventually. He could make this list as the representative of the Eagles line.
Yeah.
Because he false starts on every single play. He's a mauler. He's, as the guy just said, it's infuriating that he's such a good player. He'd be worthy.
Absolutely. Do you realize Lane Johnson's been in the league for 12 or 13 years?
Isn't he the same draft class as Trent Williams?
A 2013 first-round pick. Isn't that insane to you?
I would have said
like 2018 for him, just if you asked me on top of my head. 2013?
Okay, so Trent was 2010, so he's older. But you know what I'm thinking? He went to Oklahoma and was the left tackle right after Trent.
There you go.
That's where they're linked in my head. Yeah, he's been around forever. His play hasn't fallen
just
off,
just mushing us.
Next on Grant and Danny, I got two things for you. One, a wide receiver that's going to work out for Washington I'm excited about possibly signing here. It could be the missing veteran. We'll get to that. Plus, I'm going to have Danny look at something on air he hasn't seen to get his live reaction, and he's going to be really upset about it. This is The Fan. In 12 minutes at 3 o'clock, Sean Sharif, who many, many years ago worked here at The Fan, he's a local guy, but he's been doing radio in Dallas on 105.3 The Fan for over a decade, and he's actually on the show in the morning that talks with Jerry Jones every single week throughout the football season. He'll be with us. We'll discuss the Micah Parsons trade to the Green Bay Packers. But as we welcome you back on Grant and Danny, wanted to mention that Kendrick Bourne, who was in San Francisco with the 49ers, and then in New England with the Patriots before falling off last year, catching just 28 balls in 12 games, is working out with the Commanders. The 30-year-old has had some good NFL seasons. We've seen him go for yardage totals of 800, 667, and then another 300-400-yard seasons among his 8 years in the league. Adam Peters has familiarity with him from their time together in San Fran. I actually interviewed him in the locker room after a Niners-Commanders game one time for something I was working on. And he could not have been a cooler dude and a bigger, better, personable, more fun personality. So selfishly, from that standpoint, I also kind of like the idea of bringing him in. But 30 years old, this would be the veteran that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
KJ Osborne couldn't separate. Michael Gallup couldn't pull away from the pack. Chris Moore wasn't able to prove himself better than everybody else. And a couple of those guys ended up on the P squad. Gallup's no longer in the building. Kendrick Bourne might be exactly what we've been seeking for Washington as an extra wide receiver for them to have some veteran depth and someone that, if you needed someone to be active on game day and run a few routes for you, might be more willing and ready to help in the moment than like a Luke McCaffrey.
Precisely. And that's the security blanket. Now, if it all goes according to plan, he has not that big of a role here. But this is pro sports. This is pro football. Your best laid plans are adorable. They're precious. Thanks so much for those. We'll see what happens after the first snap of week one where, okay, that was what we were supposed to have happen, and now it's time for plan B or C or D or whatever. So I like the veteran dependability. He's been kind of mired in New England with some pretty bad offenses over the last several seasons and sort of been marginalized. You could sort of picture a mid-30s reception, 400-yard, couple of touchdown type season. That's sort of what he's averaged over the last 3 years since an 800-yard season is kind of a bona fide number two in New England all the way back in 2021. But again, you're not asking him to come in and be your number two. You're not asking him to come in and catch 50, 60, 70 balls. If you do, it's a disaster, and this, you know, the plane is crashing into the mountain the team is kaput. But to me, this is the right kind of signing. If they didn't want to go bigger game hunting, and that really wasn't available or on the plate for them this offseason in terms of the wide receiver free agent group with some of the contracts that got signed. They weren't interested in the Brandon Cookses of the world, or, you know, then you go down to guys like Marquez Valdez-Scantling or Tyler Lockett, whose best days are behind him. They didn't want to do that. This is kind of the readily available, not too expensive, some production, good guy, like a lot of bubbles are checked there on the Scantron.
Right.
This sort of fits the bill for what it seems like they were looking for.
Very different than Jalen Lane, and we'll see if the lights are too bright when the season starts for Lane. I don't think they will be. He had a great training camp. He had a really good preseason, and he just seems comfortable. You know, he seems capable and competent in the environment. But it is possible that if it's not working right away, that if you had a guy like Kendrick Bourne, he might actually move two spots up in the depth chart ahead of your rookie mid-rounder and McCaffrey, the third-rounder last year. By the way, Jalen Lane, I know, did an interview with Toby that he's going to air on Monday when he's filling in for the Junkies in the morning. Well, Jalen Lane's awesome, and you'll want to hear that because just a good dude, good kid everybody's rooting for, and he is a Hokie. He a Hokie. They play South Carolina this weekend. I believe that's a Sunday game.
Little Beamer reunion action, right?
That's not going to go well for Virginia Tech, I don't think.
It's not as big a line as I thought.
Do they wiggle the keys when they play a top 15 team? Is that how it works? What's the line? I think it's like 16, 17?
It's like 7.5 or 8.5, depends on where you look.
Oh, so they might hang in this game.
I think it could be a closer game than people are expecting. I think it could be something where the Hokies stick around, but they have really struggled in one-score games under Brent Pry, so if they're going to stick around, it's not been exactly their bread and butter. So they've got to find a way to be able to overcome some of those late-game struggles and sometimes clock mismanagement.
I'm not even trying to be a jerk. Haven't they struggled in all games?
I was going to say, damn it, under
Brent
Pry. Sitting there waiting to do the bit.
Is it just one-score games where it's been an issue?
They've struggled in football games.
I mean, they've been in a lot of games. They got hosed last year in a one-score game where they should have beat Miami. The referees,
they did get screwed in that game.
That was a catch. That was pretty clearly a catch, but regardless, yeah, I think they could stick around in this one. I think it could go one of two ways. The Hokies stick around, and South Carolina probably still wins, or South Carolina blows them out.
You will hear from Hokie Altizer on the broadcast with Bill Roth and company. He'll be in the scoreboard booth for them tomorrow. Before we get to Sean Streiff really quickly, I'm going to spin something around, Danny. We can talk more about this later in the show, but okay. I want your live reaction. These are the uniforms that Central Michigan, the Chippewas,
okay,
which is a Native American mascot for the Central Michigan football team. These are their new uniforms that they've decided to go with.
Okay.
I'm going to show these to you. I want your natural live reaction on air. I've tweeted these images at Grant H. Paulson. You can go look at these if you'd
like. I've purposely not seen it yet.
So, Danny Rouillet, I want your reaction. This is the Central Michigan Chippewas.
Those are the Redskins jerseys. That's Redskins jerseys. Those are Redskins jerseys. That's a Redskins jersey. With the stripe on the damn helmet. Everything from the trim to the... No!
The C, which could be Commander C. The cool C with a burgundy and gold helmet. And then I've got one more. This is the one that ricked me the most. Not that one. This one.
No! No! That's Ron Middleton in the early 90s.
All it is this team with a Native American mascot.
They could do this?
Just got the... Now, there's no Native American headdress, right? There's no emblem, logo, whatever. They have a different kind of C, which is cooler than the block W, but I digress. They literally just went into closets in Ashburn and found old jerseys and said, here's our new rebrand. And they did the Jason Wright thing where they have this backstory on what the burgundy means and what the gold means and why they went this route and what the history is and all these different things. What they should have just done is put out a press release saying, dude, the Redskins jerseys were awesome. We really liked them. And now, since they don't use them, we figured somebody should.
I'm not even talking about the Native American element of it, where it's like, they get to do that? I don't even mean that. I mean, I was told that that burgundy wasn't available.
Well, you see that when you do the web coloring with your RGB and then the what goes up?
No, that was the color all along. If the stupid college that's going to win four games can do it, and you told me for years it's the lying. It was the lying
These
that
are
I can't
Adidas,
handle.
Though. These are Adidas.
I don't give a buttered you-know-what what they are.
Right, but my point is maybe with the whatever they're using now, Fanatics or something, maybe the color gradient is not the same. I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not yelling at you. I promise I'm not yelling at you. But I'm looking at you and yelling, so it feels like I'm yelling at you. I'm yelling at the lying. The fact that that was there and existed and this little podunk school can do it, the sixth best school in Michigan can do it, rot in a terrible place.
I think you're sleeping on the Chippewas part.
Fine. I'm not trying to kick a hornet's nest with the argument. I care about the burgundy of lies. That's what I care about. That wasn't available to me. It's all I want. You told me that's what was going to happen, and that didn't happen. And now I got to go to, it's a special occasion. They'll win it twice this year with the all-black uniforms because they're Arizona State alternates. Poop. Fart noise, crap.
Go look at this. Central Michigan, New Jersey's at Grant H. Paulson if you want to see. I'd throw them all together, but they're out there online wherever you want to find them. Or you could just close your eyes and picture the Redskins that you grew up with.
Remember when they were good? They looked like that.
And I'll just tell you, I'll save you some time. Those are the jerseys. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Sean Sharif from Dallas. Are the Cowboys worse off this season without Micah Parsons? And why are they trying to sell this as if this is actually the best thing for the organization in 2025? That's next.